Good morning and welcome to another edition of the Best of Humble and Fred Jukebox. I'm Philip Pong. Thank you so much for listening. We're brought to you by Spearhead Brewing Company, HomegrownKits.ca, The Chambers Plan, Gig Sky, The Retirement Sherpa, Strain Print, and FYI Music News. Today's edition features a couple of very fun clips, segments with clips, as well as a legendary interview. So let's start with the Humble and Fred Jukebox. These are conversations that are timeless, that are pulled from different episodes of the show. So let's start with old TV shows. Do you miss The Monkees? Do you miss shows like that, as well as Stairlifts on The Best of Humble and Fred?
Remember that show Rockstar Supernova? I liked it. I liked
what,
that one.
Who was that? What was the band?
In Excess.
I think? No, that was the second one.
Oh.
Rockstar. No, I think you're right.
Hmm. And then a Canadian kid won it, and we had him on the show. I forget what his name was.
J.D.
No, oh, yeah. Wasn't it?
J.D. Fortune.
Yes.
Yeah.
Was that it?
Yeah.
The Canadian kid? All right.
Yeah, all right.
Rockstar Supernova was good.
Yeah, when you enjoy that show. You enjoy the show Rockstar Supernova.
Well, it was a nice change of pace. Well, American Idol.
Let's talk about another.
Wow.
Some more shows that have been off the air for 20 years.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. I mentioned it earlier this morning. Last night at the Sony Center in Toronto, Mike Nesmith and Mickey Dolenz presented themselves as the Monkees. Peter Torg is too old and tired to be part of the show. He doesn't go to the mall, and Davy Jones is dead.
Wait a minute.
Davy Jones is dead.
Wait, Davy Jones is dead?
Yeah, he died in 2012. Heart attack.
What? No, I knew that. What are you saying, that Peter Torg...
Yeah, Peter Tork can't do all the shows.
You didn't tell me that part.
I saved that, Jim.
So Mickey Dolenz and Mike Nesmith, they are the Monkees. But
yeah.
Peter Tork only does it occasionally when it's like a matinee.
I guess. Or it's not too far from California or whatever.
So he's like, I'll go to the show, but if it's at the strip mall near my house.
Yeah. It has to be Sunday morning.
But anyway, you know, for the kids here, and listen, I can't change the fact I'm 62 and you're 58 or whatever.
58.
When we were kids, when we were punks, The Monkees was a huge show. It was only on for 3 or 4 years. Yeah. But at the time, it was absolutely huge. Was it not, Howard?
Yeah, it was fantastic.
People loved it. You know, this manufactured group and all their little antics on their show and the music.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody bought... Did you ever have a monkey shirt? A double-breasted monkey shirt? I did.
A double-breasted shirt.
They used to be monkey shirts, and they sold them in all the stores, and they were double-breasted and long sleeves.
Oh. No, I don't recall that.
And that album of theirs, The Monkees, was huge. So there you go. That's 50 years ago, or 40 years ago.
I just think it's amusing that Peter Tork doesn't want to go to all the shows, but he's still part... How do you know that part? That's the part that
I read it. I read it.
But where?
I read the story about those guys coming to the Sony Center.
Yeah, but you can't trust that. Well, you know, you can't trust...
You can't trust anything. And it just said Peter Tork. Mm-hmm. He often... travels with them, but on this one, every so often he's got to take one off.
That's how you know. He's got to be 70.
Well, remember Peter Tork was always the sort of the wacky one?
Yeah. Well, they were all kind of wacky.
He's 76. My
goodness. Peter Tork?
Yeah.
Well, that's why he's not going on tour with the Monkees every day.
Yeah.
76? He can't go that far from his doctor.
But I'm thinking Sony Center, not a bad venue.
Yeah.
What exactly would that show be? You know, because that album, The Monkees, I think they had more than one album, but...
Yeah.
I guess they could do 90 minutes, I guess.
I'm a Believer. I just played that. They've got... Actually, two of their biggest songs have Believer in it. They've got I'm a Believer and Daydream Believer.
Oh. Last Train to Clarksville.
But they only have one song with Train in it.
Hold on. Okay.
There's some. Oh, yeah, here we go. This is a good song, actually.
Oh, I could hide beneath the wings.
So they got this.
But this is Davy.
Yeah.
Davy can't sing now.
Because he's deep.
Davy dead.
In his locker.
Do you remember Davy's love song that everybody loved?
I didn't realize we were going to do a retrospective on the Monkees, but I like it. Were you part of the Monkees fan club?
No.
Because you're a little older than me. Maybe you got, you know, got to send away for a spy.
You know what? I might have. I don't know.
No, what was Davy's love song?
I Want to Be Free. Remember that?
Wanna be free.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
I guess that's a love song. It was him wanting to break up with a girl. So I guess it was the anti-love song.
They have Pleasant Valley Sunday.
Yeah.
They have... I don't see I Want to Be Free here anywhere. They had a lot of songs.
No, I know. It's funny when you think back.
I do remember that, though. That was the heartfelt love song from Davy, and we all...
Yeah. He wants to be free.
Yeah.
And then he cacked in 2012. 65, right. Died of a heart attack. You line those four guys up, you'd think, who would be least likely to die? Mm-hmm. And Davy would have been the guy. And he dies. You never know.
Wow. Which monkey would be least likely to die?
I want to be free like the bluebirds.
I bet you they, you know what they do? I bet you one of the other guys that shows up for the concert. I bet you they do it. And then they play pictures of Davy looking at, you know, Ed Meadows.
Oh, I bet. Oh, I bet I bet a portion of the show is devoted to Davy.
And they'll say something like, you know, ladies and gentlemen, when we began 70 years ago after World War II, there was four of us. And a few years ago, one of us died of old age. One of us just got to old age and died. And so here it is.
When I went to see Paul McCartney, I believe there was a segment of the show where he did that with John.
Yeah.
You know, John, Davy Jones, same thing.
Well, when you're
John Lennon, Davy Jones, same thing.
When you're at a Monkees concert, if you've chosen to go to a Monkees concert, Davy Jones is John Lennon.
Yeah, I guess.
When everyone holds up their phones and the glow of the phones at the concert, and everyone sings along with Davy Jones songs. You know, Fred.
Yes, Howard.
Do you know that David Bowie changed his name to David Bowie because his real name was David Jones?
Oh,
and he didn't want to be having the same name as one of the Monkees.
Is that why? That
100% why.
I would imagine, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly why.
Because he would have just been... Yeah?
Yeah, David Bowie became David Bowie because of one of the Monkees.
When we're talking Monkees, too, we're talking 60s, not 70s.
Right? Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. The 70s Monkees. They were done by then. After the Monkees, what was the great, what was the big show after that? It was the Partridge Family.
That's right, which I imagine, obviously inspired by the Monkees.
Yeah, it was weird. It was a weird dynamic in the Partridge Family house because, you know, even though you should, at that age, you should have had your crush on Lori Partridge, the sister.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us also wondered what Mrs. Partridge might be like.
Right.
You know, if she was doing some after-school tutoring.
Florence Henderson, right?
No.
No. Oh, no, I'm thinking
it was. Yeah, it was. Wasn't it?
No. I thought. Oh.
Mrs. Partridge was...
Shirley Jones.
Shirley Jones.
Oh, yeah, that's
who
right.
Happened to also be the stepmother or whatever of...
David Cassidy.
Hmm.
She was married to Jack Cassidy.
That's right.
And he drank himself to death, didn't
God
he?
Goddamn yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now let's move on to Bobby Sherman. No.
Here come the brides.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, welcome to the show, everyone. Welcome to the show, everybody. The Monkees were playing in Toronto last night. And what was surprising, too, about that story is that the Sony Center holds well over 2,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
Were there well over 2,000 Monkee fans last
Howie,
night?
Howie, I don't know that. I don't have that information. All I do know is Depeche Mode played here last week, and it was a huge show, and we didn't even mention it. But we're right on top of the Monkees.
That's right. You knew it was a Monkee show because of all the wheel trans out in front.
There's a lineup of the buses.
Speaking of which, on Sunday during the U.S. Open, and there's a story from the U.S. Open I completely forgot to share with you yesterday. I wondered if you'd heard of it. It was a big kerfuffle in the world of golf sports, but anyway, during the broadcast, at one point on Fox, because I thought, you know, I live in this townhouse here, and it's from the basement where we have our offices to my bedroom is four floors, staircases, you know, and they had the advertisements for the chair
Stairmaster.
Mm-hmm.
Well, isn't it?
I don't know what
it's called. Oh, no, it's called
the Acorn Stairlift.
That's
what it is, and it's like these...
Right.
They show the guy installing them, and they're basically a rail system that goes through your home.
Yeah.
And the people sitting on the chairs, you know, they're trying to get... You know, I guess they're actors or old people or whatever, but they're just sitting there going, on just the look on their faces, and the voiceover's like, get your... You know, take back your home for the freedom you've been missing. And it's just these old people going up.
And they have a couple of testimonials.
Yeah, yeah.
We didn't want to leave our home,
right.
And we found out we didn't have to.
But, you know, and I don't know what age these people are, but they're just like, okay, you know, the director's like, okay, Millicent, I need you to sit there and just look happy. Mm-hmm. She's just like, I'm so happy. Up the stairs. And then the tagline is, off and installed in less than 24 hours. And I'm like, oh, you mean 24 hours? It takes 24 hours to build this stair railway in your home?
Yep.
Or does that mean that you call and within 24 hours it's installed?
I don't know. I would think it would take a long time because it looks... They tried to make it look simple as the guy was like sticking the rails together. But
right.
This would seem it would be a big job.
See, I'm concerned because in my house the staircase curves up.
Oh, they've solved it.
They can do a curved one?
So
I don't have to leave my home?
No.
This is Humble and Fred.
We've got more with the Humble and Fred Jukebox. I'm Philip Hong on the Best of Humble and Fred on air and online. First, a couple of very important announcements.
Spearhead.
Right on,
why don't we talk a little bit about Spearhead Brew?
Let's talk about the Sam Roberts Ale, okay?
Why don't we?
What can a great band and a great brewery do together? A brew a beer, of course. Spearhead Brewing Company and Sam Roberts Band present Sam Roberts Band Ale. Wow, how's that for a Canadian brew? What's that?
That means just be careful because you're leaning in.
This amber, this American Amber Ale brewed with the hit Canadian rock band is 4.5%. Now it blends an English and American ale and has characteristics of caramel, biscuit, and a dry, zesty finish with a touch of hop bitterness that strikes a refreshing chord. Notice they finish that with refreshing chord, just like a guitar chord.
Yeah.
No, I'm just bringing them all together.
I just like... I know it's immature, but I just like saying, you have a dry, zesty finish.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is it, I guess I'm immature.
The Spearhead Brewing Company and Sam Roberts together. Give one a try. Go to your LCBO.
This is Humble and Fred.
I'm Philip Hong. Now on the Best of Humble and Fred Jukebox, a segment about traffic and incidences. Or is it incidents?
Okay. Yesterday wasn't that big a deal. It was a weird encounter. I'd like to run it by you. It's weird what people will do. So Rachel and I, girlfriend Rachel, we were heading off into the city to go to hipster brunch, you know, Sunday morning, hanging out in the city. And there's this one place that is very close to here that it's weird. It's like in a neighborhood, and it's one of those restaurants. It's in the bottom of an old, I guess they would have had a convenience store there, you know, like in somebody's, all it is residential streets, and out of nowhere, there's a little restaurant, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of neat. So we went there, big lineup, and we kept on driving. And she said, oh, turn left here to go back toward where she lives. So I turned left, and all of a sudden, a car was coming toward us. And I went, I don't think that guy's going to move. And then I went, oh, I think we're on a one-way street. By mistake. Mm-hmm. Right? No big deal.
Okay.
So I turned left, heading north on this residential street.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one way. No big deal. It's Sunday morning at 9:30. So I could see the person coming toward me, and they kind of put their arms up like this. I went, oh, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned into a quickly, turned out of the way for so they could pass.
Mm-hmm.
I just turned into a little driveway.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, guy's knocking on my window.
Who?
What?
Wait. No, not different guy. Different guy. Different guy. Guy our age on a bike. Old guy in a bike. No helmet. Knocks on my window. I go, what's up? He goes... He says to me and Rachel, hey, it's a one way. I'm like, I didn't know that. And he's and I thought that would be
and
it.
You wouldn't let it go.
He goes, don't you know the rules of the road?
Yeah.
I said, well, now we're...
Funny coming from a cyclist.
Now,
anyway, yeah.
Now, we're in it now.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you know the rules of the road?
I think that doesn't even make sense.
So I said, well...
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I'm aware. You know, go ahead. I'm sorry.
You imagine?
Don't you know the rules of the road? Yeah, that's why I pulled in here, because I know you're not supposed to go this way on a one-way.
Were you in this fight?
No.
You imagine?
People.
I know. Mm-hmm. Now, old Howard's out of the car. At this point, that's what I said to Rachel. I said, you know, there was a time when I would have gotten, don't you know the rules of the road? And I would have gotten out and I said, have you ever seen Fargo? And would have got a golf club and started beating his bike.
Right.
And Rachel's trying to get him. So he's like on Rachel's side. Mm. And she's like, oh, let's just go. I said, no, hang on a second. I go, excuse me, sir. Mm. Have you never made a mistake in your life? Because I said, that's what's happened here. We made a mistake. Mm-hmm. And he goes, well, I try not to. That's just his response. Mm-hmm. Well, I said, you've made one now.
By crossing the Great Humble Howard.
No.
The wrong way.
Not the Great Humble Howard. Okay, but you made a mistake in that old Humble Howard. This would have been a whole different encounter. Don't you know the rules? Yeah, I know the rules. That's why I was going the wrong way in a one. No, what I should have said was, yes, I know the rules.
Well, you were in the middle of correcting it, so obviously you know.
No, I should have said, yes, I know the rules, but I flaunt them anyway. I go the opposite way.
Sunday mornings, I like to go the wrong way in a one-way street, just to run over bastards like you.
Yeah, against the grain.
Don't you know the rules of the road, is what the old fella said to me. And I said to Rachel, I said, you know, it's funny, because if I had witnessed somebody going the wrong way up my street, I don't know that I would knock on their window. But if I might say, hey, do you guys know, like, this is a one way? Oh, sorry.
Almost like a friendly thing. Buddy, you're going the wrong way.
Yeah. Like that.
Yeah.
I don't know what grumpy grandpa bike pants had going. But he was quite, he wanted to make sure I knew.
And what about the person in the car that was coming?
They just passed.
Oh, they didn't care.
They didn't care. Because they knew I'd gone. Obviously, they're looking at me like we've all made mistakes.
Oh, no, we've all made mistakes.
And, you know, the thing about being in traffic and the thing about, you know, living in a big city, sometimes we get in each other's way. And but it was interesting because I drove away and I sort of was laughing about it, and you know, and that was kind of the running gag. I didn't laugh like that. Jesus, let's just review the first 10 minutes.
What?
Tiger Woods?
Do you not want me to play along with you?
I do.
Oh, okay.
That's why I'm doing this. All right. Review. I'm insane. Tiger Woods missed the cut.
Insane.
Yeah. But I said to Rachel, I said, you know, it's funny. There was a time when I wouldn't have been able to handle old grumpy pants in an amusing fashion. I found it quite amusing. So, although I wasn't letting him get away from the car without the conversation about the world's full of people.
And you know what? What do they say? You get more bees with honey or whatever that.
Right, rather than vinegar. Yeah.
No, rather than freaking out on the guy.
Which I didn't.
You know what I mean? To sort of just logic and be calm with him, he feels worse than if you chewed him out. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like if you just say, hey, I made a mistake. You've never made a mistake. It's like, geez, you know, maybe I've overreacted here.
Well, I think there was enough of the edge on me a little bit that I think he, especially when I wouldn't let him get away from the car, I said, no, hang on a second.
Hang on, yeah. Just don't you dare walk away.
Just hang on a second, fella. We're going to have a conversation.
Yeah.
But, And it was not, you know, unpleasant. It wasn't pleasant.
No.
But imagine that. Hey, don't you... Who asks that question? Don't you know the rules of the road? Oh, I know the rules.
Yeah. You know, a week or so ago, I forgot. Now that you remind me, I had a bit of an incident, too. I was at Petro-Can. They had just dropped Petro-Can at Mayfield and... doesn't matter. You're Ontario.
No, it does. What's the intersection?
You're Ontario. Which corner?
Up in my neck of the wood. All they really drop the price of the gas every so often for whatever reason out there.
Sure.
So it was down about 6 or 7 cents, and I just happened to need gas. I took Delisa's car over, a little, you know, favor to her.
After she's done so much for you.
Yeah. Anyway, you know, everybody was there wanting gas. Mm-hmm. So I pull around the way I needed to because of where her gas thing is. And I waited 5 minutes, probably pushing 10. And then the person I was waiting for, like I was two cars back, and then just as I'm about to go in after this 10-minute wait, a guy comes in off the street and whips right into the spot from the other side.
Uh-oh.
Really?
You know that?
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So anyway, then I see somebody leave at the end, so I pull around, and then I just rolled my window down, and I said, "Hey, buddy, thanks. I didn't see you." Like, he totally started freaking out on me. And I started it, but I said, "Hey, buddy, thanks a lot for that," right? And he knew what I was talking about. And then he started screaming. He wouldn't let it go. And then I get out, and he's yelling at me over from two...
About what? Because you dared speak to him?
Because I...
pointed out his wrong?
I pointed out that I was waiting. So, and then I didn't yell back, because I'm thinking, oh, you know, it's the year of the knife. You see all the stabbings in the city?
Oh, yeah.
And this is running through my head. I don't know who this guy is. He was probably 26, 27, and, you know, he looked like a tough guy. And he was driving this Hummer-type thing, and I thought, he'll just come over and stick me.
Or turn the gas into a flamethrower.
Yeah. Or that's, I've seen he'll movies. Run up and pour gas all over my feet and light a match.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You'll just be burning.
But see, I started that up, and it was almost like he was a kid, and I'm thinking, hey, buddy, thanks. And I just thought
he would
might
sheepishly,
go, sorry.
Yeah, sorry, mister.
But he knew, too. Like, that was
so he yelled
thing.
At you.
Oh, F this, F that.
About what?
Just screaming at me, I didn't know. What's your problem? And I just didn't say another word, because I thought...
And so he kept screaming
at
you.
This guy went from 0 to 100 so quickly that I'm not getting into it, because he might even beat me up. I mean, at the very least, he'd come over and he'd like, make quick work of me.
So what... Why? And he just kept yelling at you for the entire experience.
Well, for a couple of minutes anyway, and then
and
when I pulled over like two pumps down, he was still like leaning over, swearing at me.
About what?
I didn't know. Hey, man, what's your problem? I didn't know. Dude, what am I supposed to do? He just went on and on.
But at some point, okay, well, yeah, okay, great.
I just didn't acknowledge him, and then he stopped.
Did he?
And then other people were looking at me, shaking their heads like, wow, this guy's a bit much, eh?
And did anyone recognize you and think, oh, that's it. That's the reaction the show always gets.
No.
Hey, shut up.
But isn't that funny when you're young and you get into those situations, you don't ever really consider the consequence. But now, when you're older, like I think now, that guy could come and punch me a couple of times. And like I could be like at a commission.
Yeah, especially because all you said, like it's not like you guys were into it and then that happened.
No,
all you said was, hey, thanks. Mm-hmm. And all of that came out of
sarcastically.
Yeah, okay. Well, whatever.
I did. I said it sarcastically.
Yeah, but that doesn't deserve the response. At any point, did he say, do you know the rules of the road?
No. I could have said, do you not know the rules of the gas station?
Exactly.
You wait your turn, single file.
Do you not know the rules of life?
Remember that single file, Indian style? Remember that? Couldn't say that nowadays. Do you remember that saying? Single file, Indian style, and it went on. Something, I don't know. Can't say that, huh?
Of course, Sean knows.
Oh, okay.
Of course, Sean knows. He's from racist Georgetown.
Yeah. People are angry out there. Huh?
Yeah, man.
They are.
You're welcome to connect with Humble and Fred anytime. Humble and Fred at humbleandfredradio.com.
Humble and Fred Radio!
Canada's national morning show.
A legendary visit on the way coming up on The Best of Humble and Fred. He's musical and he's funny. If that's all coming up, there's your clues. I'm full of Pong.
I grew up a poor Jew on the prairie, hadn't anything but my old man Harry and some gefilte fish. Gefilte fish was all we had. We fished it all the day long, and me and my dad came back empty, so we just ate pickles. Had to get somebody to fix our stuff. We didn't know how to do it ourselves.
We're so Jews. I hired a guy.
Because we're Jews on the prairie. Jews on the prairie. We're Jews. We're Jews on the prairie.
There you go.
That's the Prairie Jew song.
It's the Prairie Jew. Tonight at 9, following a little mosque on the prairie, it's the Prairie Jew. I was wondering if I could help me.
Mm-hmm.
This is Humble and Fred.
Welcome back. This is another edition of The Best of Humble and Fred, and I'm Philip Hong. Thank you so much for listening on air and online. I do have little time to tell you what's coming up because we have a legendary interview, a very meaty interview. So here, from musical legendary status, here is the great Stephen Page on The Best of Humble and Fred.
All right, let's do the formal introduction. For the last 30 years, this gentleman and Fred and I have been involved in one another's lives in a variety of ways. The last time he was on the show, 2013, we talked all about the end of one era. And today we'll talk about what's been going on in his life, the music he makes, the artist that he is, the guy that he's become, and here to talk about a new record. Say hello to Stephen Page,
yes.
Everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, Stephen Page.
Paget. Is it Paget?
It is on Air Canada, it's Paget. Anytime I get on it, Monsieur Paget.
Monsieur Paget. Mm-hmm. How are things? You look great, by the way.
Thanks, feel good.
But really, just off the top, was the van, was it luxurious inside?
It was like... It,
leather?
It was leather. There was, okay. It wasn't gaudy. I didn't...
Okay.
I mean, it was morning. So
there wasn't disco lights.
I didn't see disco lights or right. A strip of jeans, different colored LEDs.
It didn't smell of stripper.
No, or tequila.
But it left the right impression?
It was, yes, and the driver was very friendly.
Okay.
It looked very clandestine, though, coming out.
I know, it looked like he was pulling a heist.
Because although the license plate was a vanity plate that says something like celebrity.
Yeah.
Maybe feel really self-conscious walking out of my parents' condo this morning.
Because we used the same company at Christmas for Jim Cuddy, and it was a stretch limousine. I just assumed you would get the same thing.
Oh, I was happy to have the van.
All
it was
right.
Like it looked like it was made for a full band.
Oh, okay.
So maybe they thought I was bringing people.
Well, we're so happy to have you here. This is cool. We've got it's funny. I haven't held an album for a long time. The new album's called Discipline.
Yep.
Heal Thyself Part Z.
Part Z.
We'll talk about that. I wanted to begin, you know, Kenny from Warner's here. We've all known each other a long time. And earlier when Ken came here, we sort of talked about what we could talk about with you and the things of interest. I want to start with... the call you got saying we're inducting you guys into the Canadian Music Hall of Fame. And let's just talk about that story. What did that feel like when you got that call, knowing you were going into the hall with the band?
Exciting, more than anything else. Just that it was like, you know, as Ed and I said when we met up at the Junos this year, that we were the guys who always made fun of the people in the Hall of Fame. You know, it was like the old folks' home, and now we were being inducted into the old folks' home, which is of course humbling. That part where you feel like now I'm just an old relic. And on one side of the coin, but the other side is like, oh, people remember all that stuff that we did, and people have like a good feeling about it. So yeah, it was really nice. And right away, I got a text from Ed saying, you know, the first person I wanted to talk to about this was you because I was. You know,
how long, give us some context, how long had it been, this was 2018, mm-hmm. since you had had any contact with each other?
9 years, basically. Apart from, like, through lawyers and that kind of thing.
Is that the first thing that went through your mind? If we're doing this, I'm going to be face-to-face with these guys
again.
Yeah,
but that was actually brought, like, they actually came, I think, to both parties, both to me and to the other guys and said, we want to induct you into the Hall of Fame, but my sense is that they didn't want to do it without all five of us.
Mm-hmm.
So would you be okay if this happened? And, you know, you wouldn't necessarily have to play together, but we'd like that and that kind of thing. I think they were very tiptoeing around our feelings, just trying to get a sense of whether we would even consider it. And, you know, right away I was totally fine with it. I'd be happy, you know.
But was there a sense, not butterflies, but a sense of when you got the call, you're like, ooh, well, now I'm going to have to do this.
Yes.
And yes, it's an honor, but it also comes with, you know, some other stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, there was lots of that. And you know, in the months, like we knew before they had announced it, so I already kind of had that sensation as it got closer and closer to doing the event. Yeah, I got more and more. It's not really nervous, but like you said, it's kind of like butterflies, the sense of kind of trepidation and hopefulness, but also like dread. There was a sense of dread, which went away when we were in the room together.
But when they first asked you, was there any part of you thinking, you know, I don't know if I want to do this?
No.
No,
I was totally cool with it. I've spent enough years now away from it where I've, like, I think I just understand the value of what we did together. I'm not full of bitterness or regrets or anything like that. Like, that stuff filters out over years.
Sure, it goes away with time.
And you also, you build up more of what you do on your own or your stuff away from the band.
And it can be exhausting, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Like, and to carry that on.
So I just knew going into this whole situation in Vancouver, it was going to be brief, but I was going to walk in with all positivity. Like, there was no reason to bring in anything else.
I want to talk about some of the, because I like a lot of Canadians and fans of the band. I've watched the performance at the Junos several times. But I want to back up, because at some point, you have to see them for the first time, and there's all these milestones, if you will. You have to see each other for the first time. What was that like? Then you have to decide what songs you're going to do. Do you rehearse them? Can you just take us through that?
Well, so they had, you know, a lot of it was done through email first. Was like, what songs do we have to think about? What songs you want to perform? And all Ed had said to me before was, you know, we want to make this a positive experience for everybody. But I don't think any of us knew what that was going to be. I think they weren't even committing to whether we were going to play together or not, because they probably didn't know what I expected out of the situation. And, you know, they were kind of tiptoeing around which songs we were going to sing. And I just immediately said, I think we should do One Week and $1 Million. And I think my sense is they must have just gone, oh, okay, good. Like, it wasn't going to be...
What would the trepidation be?
Song.
Oh, well, I think they thought maybe you want to do one of your solo
songs.
That's
my guess. Or that I would want to do something like, you know, Brian Wilson, or one of the, like, ones where it's just me singing up front. And I thought...
Well, One Week's the perfect one, because it's both of you.
Well, and $1 Million.
Right.
You know, and those are the two songs that I don't do live. Just because... You know, it always felt weird to me to do those ones because they're duets. And because they're me and Ed duets, I would feel like... I don't know, a little bit like a cover band covering my own songs.
That's right. You know? Where's the Ed? Who's doing the Ed part today?
Yeah, exactly. You know, whatever. It's like when you go see Randy Bachman, and he's got kind of the other guy doing the Burton parts. It always feels a little bit weird to me. Where this way, I could keep those songs special. And if something like this ever happened, then it would feel kind of pure to me, or feel honest.
So talking about the first time you saw...
That was a relief to Ed, too,
I'm
sure.
It must have been a relief to them.
Sure it was, yeah.
So the first time you see each other, was it at the event?
A couple days before, they rented a rehearsal space, and we spent an evening rehearsing.
So what's that like when you walk in? You haven't seen each other in 9 years, the boys in the band?
I walked in, and thankfully the guys weren't there yet. I think they were on dinner break or something, so I went in, and they still have most of the same road crew that... You know, we had for the time that I was in the group. So it was all guys that I knew and, you know, I had missed, honestly. So it was a chance to kind of catch up with some of those crew guys first. You know, it really is a family. And to be the one guy who's kind of out of that family was a weird feeling. And then the guys in the band came in. And, yeah, you could feel a little bit of that, like,
well, nice.
Invisible You're- fence at the beginning. And I just tried to... You know, give everybody a hug and get into making jokes and see how quick we can
and
get
how, back how into long it. And how long did that take?
Not long. And as soon as we started playing, like, I was kind of freaking out the night before this, like, thinking we're doing 1 week and I haven't done it in 9 years and I don't know how to play it anymore. Mm-hmm. Guitar, I'm trying to figure out, that doesn't seem right. I'm looking stuff up on YouTube.
I love that.
And I'm like, that's trying to remember how to do your own songs. And as soon as we got in there, I just put the guitar on, and I didn't even think about it. It was just the muscle memory came back instantly.
So at no point when you walked into the rehearsal did anyone yell, "Hey, Mr. Jewman!" That didn't happen?
They might have.
It's fascinating that you say that about, because I've asked other artists about remembering when you go back on the road, you have to go into rehearsal and relearn songs you've written. Mm-hmm. And I find it fascinating that you still have to do that. You still have to find somewhere on the guitar where that chord was.
Well, and that was me overthinking it. Like, once I was in the rehearsal room, I didn't think about it at all. I mean, I still screw up songs I sing every night. Like, I'll miss a verse of Brian Wilson or something, but that's just because I'm a moron sometimes.
Well, we're all getting old, Steve. I've got gout. He's got something.
So at the rehearsal, did you just do those two songs, or did you relax and maybe do some others, too?
We just did those, I think. Yeah. And although part of me was kind of, you know, I would have loved to have just done more. But I think they're cautious. You know, don't get too comfortable.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Can we just go away from the Junos for a second? What songs do you do when you're performing as Stephen Page? Like, you mentioned Brian Wilson.
Like, of the hits, kind of are the ones you recognize. You know, Brian Wilson, What a Good Boy, Enid.
My Apartment?
Yep, Old Apartment. It's All Been Done. And then a bunch of kind of deep cuts, Break Your Heart, and I Live With It Every Day, and Alternative Girlfriend.
We love that.
Jane.
Yep. It's funny because at The Edge, we definitely played Jane.
Yep. Yeah, all that, you know, those first, like, three records, Edge played all the time then.
Does the crowd ever request songs that you'd prefer not to sing? And how do you handle that?
Oh, let's go.
No.
Nope. No, the worst one is like people start yelling out for Brian Wilson in the second song.
I'm yeah, right, right.
If I sang it now, the show would be over.
Yeah, that would be. Yeah.
You know, is that the last song or the encore song?
Usually it's the last song.
Yeah.
Call and Answer, there's another one I do.
Love that song.
Oh, I love that song,
Love
too.
Both those songs. Mm-hmm. And,
you know, I'll pick you up. Yeah.
What song is that?
That was,
are you okay?
I should have done it.
Jesus, that yeah. Love that part. Yeah.
Is that actually in the song?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll tell you, Brian Wilson is amongst my favorite songs of all time. It's certainly my favorite Bare Naked Ladies song. And in 2001, when you came in with Jack Layton, do you know this story?
No.
Amanda Barker, our producer, hi. Stephen Page.
Hi, Amanda.
It had always been my favorite song. And in those days, before you could go on, you know, guitarchord.com, you know, I used to try and figure out how to play the chords, and once in a while I'd ask Stephen, is this an A minor? So he came in with Jack Layton, and Fred and I, you know, we were hoping to promote this new radio station, and Stephen and Jack made us, we had this deal where if we joined the NDP,
yes,
we made a deal with Steve, he just alone would play our Mojo Christmas party.
Yeah.
And I asked him, I got up my courage, and I said, could I play along with you? And I remember us going back and forth on email and him telling me what the chords were. And I was pretty nervous. And one of my favorite radio memories, there was about 300 people, and I was on stage trembling. Like, literally, like, my heart was pounding, and I got to start the song.
Mm-hmm.
And when I played that first chord and people started to cheer, I was looking over, I'm like, is this really happening to me? And this guy who wrote the song is about to sing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I completely...
Career high.
But that especially the when it gets fast. I got the A minor beginning part, okay.
Yeah.
But I really wish I'd had a recording or a video of that, because it was a huge thrill for me. Like a real fan moment and an out-of-body experience. And I just want to tell that story, but I imagine with you and that song, when you get to that part of the show and hit that first chord, does it still thrill you when they... Because people must lose their minds.
Yeah, it's a nice moment. And the thing is, I do it towards the end of the show or last song on the show, and so it's a marker for me of how successful I've been over the show as far as, like, bringing the audience to me and bringing me to them, you know, having that connection. You know, most shows are good, but there's special ones where you have this, like, a psychic bond with your audience for the hour and a half that you're up there, or in my case, 2.5 hours because I talk too much.
Yeah, but, you and me both.
Yeah, I can. I don't know if I've ever gone short with a show. It's a problem.
Well, and how often are you? How often are you performing?
All the time. Like, one thing is, it's amazing how invisible you kind of feel, like, in the grand scheme of things. Like, even though I might have a date on my website, people aren't necessarily checking that stuff
right
all the time. But people come out to the shows, but they're coming out to see me in whatever, I'll do 4 days in southern Alberta or something, and then it's home for 4 days, and then I'm off to the East Coast for a bunch of stuff, and then you've got some private shows. And
what size of venues are you playing as Stephen Page, the solo artist?
In Canada, it's traditionally been kind of that you know, performing arts center size. So, like, you know, I don't know, places around the GTA, they might go to, like, the Rose Theater in Brampton or something
like that. Like a 1,000-seater.
Yeah, or less.
Oakville Performing Heart. Yep. 800 seats.
Yep. But you've also got all these ones in, like, in, let's say, in the middle of Alberta where they're, like, 300 and 400 seats.
And you come with a band, or is it just on your own?
It's a trio. So nice. It's me and Craig Northey from The Odds, who's also my co-writer and co-producer, and Kevin Fox on cello. And Kevin and I have played together like since I left BNL. I met him when he used to play with Sarah Harmer when they toured with us about 2000. And Craig, I've been friends with since 1992 or 3 or something. And we've been writing together and playing together. And I also play with The Odds too. Like, I'll use The Odds as my band. If I need like a rock band, then it'll be The Odds and me together.
We used to love them. We had them on our show back in the early days of The Edge.
Nobody doesn't like Heterosexual Man. That song. Or Eat My Brain.
Do you remember when they were warming up one day? We had the band in.
Yeah.
And this is when I don't know if you remember this story, but this is when I fell in love with them. We were about to go on the air, and they were warming up, and I can't remember who they were. The two lead singers did a bunch of Beatles stuff, and I didn't realize they had been a Beatles cover band or had done a lot of Beatles covers, and their harmonies were insane.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah, they know all that stuff. Like that, and that's when we first met them. I was aware of their records and stuff, but I was not. I didn't realize that they were largely
the mic
cover
just
band.
Dropped out.
It dropped out. No,
is the mic dropping?
Yeah. No,
okay.
I can.
Oh
hear.
No, it's okay.
All right,
it's
okay.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, they had a cover band. They would do every weekend at a club in Vancouver, and it was the most ridiculous cover band of all time because they could do anything, play any song, but also they were ridiculously funny. And would do everything they could to kind of annoy the audience. So we learned a lot from them.
You said you do 4 days and then come home. Where is home?
I live outside of Syracuse, New York.
Oh, you're still in upstate, eh? Upstate New York.
This is Humble and Fred.
More from Stephen Page coming up. This is our latest visit with him from a couple months ago. I'm Philip Hong. Thank you so much for listening to The Best of Humble and Fred on air, online. First, a couple of very important announcements.
The number one plan for employee benefits is the Chamber's plan. We use it. You should, too. You know, a lot of smaller companies think they can't afford insurance for their staff. You know, everything from a company of our size, you know, 5 or 6, 7 people, and all the way to 100. Benefits enjoyed by 30,000 Canadian businesses. And because of the way they structure it, it's a pooling system, so your rates will be stable. And that's another thing. Stable, simple, and smart. Check it out. Chamberplan.ca. Employee benefits don't need to be confusing. I wish they wouldn't.
This is Humble and Fred.
There it is, the latest from Stephen Page, stephenpage.com, the new record. That's hilarious. Wow. The new disc is called Discipline, Heal Thyself Part 2. You mentioned that one of the guys from The Odds helped to produce. Is it Craig?
Yeah, Craig, and this song is The Odds actually playing with me.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's a great record, and I say it, you know, we both thought of this, and respectfully, it's got a real early Bare Naked Ladies feel, and on The Odds feel, now that you say that.
Yeah. Well, thank you. That's top. Hold on, Barker.
I'm not on. Oh, there I am. For me, listening to the first listen, for me, I listened to it quite a bit in the last 24 hours, but the first listen had a Clash feel for me. I really, like, the rally cry kind of thing of this is right now, and we need to talk about this.
It's interesting.
It actually made me teary.
Wow.
Yeah.
Howard's holding a sleeve for vinyl. Is this a must now? Like,
you know what? More than anything else, I don't know if people listen to them that much. I think some people do, but I think a lot of people just like to have. It's like a piece of merch to sell. Mm-hmm. Like, that's really what it's there for. And,
well, as I said, I've been a radio guy a long time. Used to play records. It's been a long time since I've held one. It's interesting too because this is the clean version, Sean, that we play.
Yeah.
But there's an explicit version with the F word. But even in the
in the track listing. You know, White Noise, Shooting Star, Yourself.
I mean, that's you didn't do those. That wasn't a title back in the olden days.
No, because I think you realize, too, that your audience is only going to get more... Okay, it's only going to get smaller, basically, as you get older. Like, it's not like you can... I don't have huge hopes of having a big crossover top 40 hit where that... And you're not going to have Walmart saying, oh, we're not going to take that record in our stores anymore. It's a much more of a niche thing now.
Well, is that even part of the strategy, like radio play now?
I could... Well, what do you think, Ken?
We're trying.
They're trying, and they'll say, yeah, we don't really hear it. What? Come back to us when there's a story. That's,
really?
That's the radio. So it's like... You know, I could hire, like in the United States, I could hire radio pluggers and stuff like that. It's like, well, I don't think it's worth wasting my money on that.
Mm-hmm. But you said your audience is only getting smaller. And our experience,
not really true,
well, but our experience has been, you know, we used to be on one of the biggest alternative stations in North America. And we had this huge audience. And now we do this. And yet, even though the audience statistically might be smaller, it's bigger in the interactivity of it.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. The connection we have.
That's kind of what I was alluding to with when you make a record like this, you're aware that the people who are really looking forward to it are really looking forward to it. They're really invested. So what it means for me on a live situation, like I was talking about doing shows here and there and kind of flying around and let you know under the radar, and now I'm announcing a tour. It's a UK tour, and US tour starts next week and goes right till Christmas, and then Canadian tour is next year. But you know, when you go to those places, it's like you have a conversation, a continuing conversation with your fans. That they kind of, I don't know, there's a certain level of respect for the music that you're putting out now. That I wouldn't have expected. People really want to hear it, and it's not. It doesn't feel self-indulgent. Sometimes, as an artist who's been around a long time, playing your new stuff feels self-indulgent.
Sure, because you know people. A lot of people are coming to your show because they know and it's part of that almost the Field of Dreams. You know, and they want to come back to a time and connect
exactly
to a time when they were younger and Gordon was being played on the radio.
Yeah,
and
they have a million different memories, and I'm. You know, I fully respect that in the show, too. And I talk to the audience about that, that, you know, all of your memories of these songs kind of have nothing to do with me. They have to do with that song in your life. And all of you come back to this one place and kind of sing that memory back at me.
That's
it's
what
an
it
awesome
is.
Awesome thing.
Yeah.
It's a great, like, I'm fortunate to have it. So I don't feel like they have to now sit and listen to my new stuff, but they actually seem to want to hear it. When I make fun of it and I say, well, now I know it, no. But the part you're really here for, the new material, they go, yeah, I don't say that. No, we want to hear it.
What were you going to say, Burke?
I was just going to say, for me, it harkens back to the authenticity of the early days of Bare Naked. Like, I remember going to Theater New Brunswick to a packed, sold out, if you could get tickets to this 400-seat theater. And it was huge, like making that trip from high school. I grew up in New Brunswick. And
which town?
Woodstock.
So did you come to the Fredericton then?
Yeah.
So Playhouse Theater?
Yes.
In 1993?
Yep.
When my shoes got stolen from the dressing room. Someone broke in through the window and stole my sneakers while we were on stage.
I'm sorry.
I wonder what they're worth now.
Where are they, Barker?
Here they are.
See, I'm playing the Playhouse again in February.
Amazing.
Yeah, or January.
And for me, that was like, there was such an authenticity there, and that was the whole draw of the album. Seeing you guys on YTV. I moved to Canada when I was 13, a few years prior, and that authenticity and intelligence, that playing the Rose, those types of spaces, that's where I'd want to see you. Right. Absolutely.
You said you're going to UK. Did you guys have some impact in the UK?
Yeah, we actually started playing there before Gordon came out.
Right.
We did kind of a vinyl version of the old yellow tape.
Mm-hmm.
And released that there and started playing clubs, and we did Glastonbury and like smaller.
And didn't you guys
there.
Play the Cavern for years?
Exactly. Every lunchtime we did the Cavern and used to masturbate each other. And then,
yeah,
yes, of course.
We were going to ask you about that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What a bizarre part of the. There are things I don't need to know.
Oh, as I get older, my interviews are going to get weird.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. All five of us sat around off to.
We didn't know circles were part of the rock world.
He just found out that they weren't.
We're talking about the McCartney interview.
This is Humble and Fred.
We've got more with Stephen Page on the way. He performs in our next segment. You're listening to the best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Hong. Please keep listening for the fun, fun tunes.
The girl works at the store, Sweet Jane St. Clair, was dazzled by her smile while I shopped there.
Welcome back. You're listening to the second hour of the best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Hong. Thanks so much for listening. This series is called the Humble and Fred Jukebox, and we're featuring some important guests along with some great, valuable conversation. We're going to continue with our Stephen Page interview, and I hear that guitar going.
So Stephen's going to play. We had talked about what to play. There's something old, something new. And this is a song we'd been talking about in the last segment. And I didn't, you suggested it, so I like, you know, play it if you like. Yeah. I mean, it's like only my favorite song.
Yeah, I'll do that.
StephenPage.com, tour dates, all the information. And as we've mentioned, the new record is really good. And we played White Noise. It's from Discipline, Heal Thyself, Part 2. But here to take you back to a time that, when we all kind of met. It was the early days of The Edge and our show, and you guys were such a part of it.
CFNY, actually.
CFNY. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Here once again is Stephen Page, everybody.
Stephen Page.
Drove downtown in the rain, 9:30 on a Tuesday night, just to check out the late night record shop. Call it impossible, call it compulsive, call it insane. But when I'm surrounded, I just can't stop. It's a matter of instinct, it's a matter of conditioning, and a matter of fact. You can call me Pavlov's dog. Ring a bell and I'll salivate. How'd you like that? Dr. Landy, tell me you're not just a pedagogue, 'cause right now I'm lying in bed just like Brian Wilson did. Well, I'm lying in bed just like Brian Wilson did. Whoa. So I'm just staring at the ceiling tiles, and I'm thinking about, oh, what to think about. Just listening and re-listening to Smiley Smile, and I'm wondering if this is some kind of creative drought, because I'm lying in bed just like Brian Wilson did. Oh, well, I'm Brian Wilson dead. Whoa. And if you wanna find me, I'll be out in the sandbox, just wondering, oh, where the hell are them? Love is gone. I'm playing my guitar, building castles in the sun, oh, 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 and singing fun, 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 lying in bed just like Brian Wilson did. Well, I'm lying in bed just like Brian Wilson did. Whoa. I had a dream that I was 300 pounds, and though I was very heavy, I floated till I couldn't see the ground. I floated till I could not see the ground. Oh, somebody help me, I couldn't see the ground. Somebody help me, couldn't see the ground. Somebody help me, 'cause I'm like Brian Wilson did. Oh, well, I'm
just to check out the late night record shop. Call it impulsive, you call it compulsive, call it insane. When I'm surrounded, I just can't stop.
I would have predicted this. As soon as you started playing, I look over at Barker, and she's crying her eyes out.
Shut your face.
No, I know.
I was making out with Brad Griffith in a Toyota Tercel.
Not to mention what you were doing at a tire fire. When you wrote that, was that a song? And I don't, you know, because we were just talking about McCartney and how he talked on the Stern interview a lot about how he and John would write. Did you write that with Ed, or did you write that yourself and bring it to Ed?
That one I wrote myself.
And was it the kind of relationship where you would go to him, because you guys wrote a lot of songs together, where you would go and say, hey, I've got this idea. Because it's an unusual song, which I think is what resonates with so many of us that love it. But it's not your everyday narrative.
Right.
It's a very uniquely Stephen Page narrative. It's smart. It's interesting. It's got a... The subject is odd.
Yeah.
And you have
a different sections,
a bunch of layers to it. Yep. So did you come to him with like most of it complete or just the beginning and say, I'm working on this?
I think it was pretty well done. Writing songs is like... I'm trying to get as close to this thing as I can.
I know.
Writing songs is it's a weird... Like there's a famous Leonard Cohen quote where he says, if I knew where songs came from, I'd go there more often.
Right.
Like you just never know. You work your ass off trying to shoehorn lyrics into a song, and then something like Brian Wilson comes out, and it kind of comes out all at once, and you don't know where it came from. You know, maybe there's a handful of those songs in my career, and that was one of those ones that came pretty well finished. I mean, the only thing that was was that outro, that which has the the bass solo that Jim does on the Barenaked Ladies version with the boom 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 boom, which is kind of his own little lead.
But that's interesting you say that, because McCartney said that to Stern about I think it was Maybe I'm Amazed, that he had it, he couldn't sleep one night and he had this riff in his head and he sat down at the piano and it came out pretty much fully formed. And you just wonder, I guess that's part of the inspiration, if you're thinking about music the way a musician would, that little things would pop up. And so when you sat down and started with that chord, the G to the D to the A minor, it was like, oh, there it is.
Yeah, and I think,
By the way, I noticed you do the capo now.
I always do it. This is the original.
Seriously? I don't remember. Maybe we did.
This is
maybe,
the key.
Yeah, we must
have. It's always been in B flat.
Oh, okay.
And I don't even know why.
So you sat down and those kind of came out.
You know what I was thinking about was Spirit of the West. You'll have to excuse me, I'm not at my best. I've been so drunk for a week.
Wait,
yeah. I've been drunk since I left. You know that, whatever it's called, Home for a Rest.
Yeah.
And you know how it sort of does that slowly at the beginning, and the chords are similar too, and then it goes. It's kind of a Barenaked Ladies beat him too.
Yeah.
But he repeats that same verse at the end, up tempo like that. So that shape of Home for a Rest, I think, is what I was imagining in my head. And then I just kind of sang this melody for Brian Wilson. And the chords are weird for it when it does like... And if you want to find me, I'll be out in the sand. But it doesn't... Like, that's not where chords are supposed to go. I was just following the melody, and I didn't really know any better because I was 19 and new to it and not really all that well-versed. I kind of... you spend the rest of your life trying to find that that innocence to make you write stuff that's that fresh.
But the move to the A minor, and I don't want to get too technical, but it's such a, it's almost ironic we're talking about McCartney because it's a Beatlesque move. It's the major chord, then the minor fall, as Leonard Cohen would say. And it just it's what gives you that emotional, it's so evocative. You know, and just because what you did with the Spirit of the West is they go to another major chord.
Yeah.
But when you go to the minor chord, it's like, ooh, well, there it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and it just kind of went. What I would always do then was follow the melody. The melody came first, and then the chords would follow that. And that was like, I think, probably one of the great successes of learning how to write songs was learning that the melody was the most important part rather than. What was correct as harmonically. Mm-hmm. A lot of people approach it just by they play a chord sequence and then they write a melody over top of it. And you can get stuck into that. And sometimes, for me, writing a melody when I'm driving or walking or whatever else, and then later trying to figure out what chords go with it, that makes it much
more. How was it received when, like, Ed was your writing partner and best buddy, and you guys had been writing and playing music, and you said, hey, I have this song. The chords are G, D, D, A minor, and C. And then you started singing to it. Did he say, yeah?
Yeah, I think at that point, we thought everything each other did was awesome. Like, we're just like.
Remember when you and I used to be like that?
Yeah, I think we were like, you're the greatest. You're the greatest. This is awesome.
Well, did you have those moments, too, where you thought of a song, like, in the middle of the night and had to get up and write something down or you would forget it? And how long between you thinking of that song and you would present it to Ed? And were you ever embarrassed? Like,
oh,
sheepish.
Always sheepish. Yeah. Presenting songs to your band was like probably the most nerve-wracking thing as a songwriter ever, was having new songs. Even when I had Ed there with me and we were presenting songs together, I would always feel like, because it was at the end of the day, the judgment came down to whether the band felt any attachment to it or felt that they had anything to offer or add to it. And you kind of have to sell them, but you're also selling them something that's so, so incredibly personal. And when you're just writing a song, even though it's like it's with Ed, it's, you know, your closest buddy, and you go, I got this idea, and kind of goes like, you know, whatever. It's like, when I was born, they looked at me and said, it kind of, you have to like not make eye contact because you just hope that he's not going to go, oh, I don't feel it. But that wouldn't often happen. But as a partnership, you have to trust each other enough to be able to say, no, that line sucks, or that's not the right way to go.
Did you guys ever finish each other's song? Like you start, you know, let's say you start that song, Good Boy, and he says, oh, I have a, like McCartney's famous or Lennon's famous for saying, I just did the middle eight.
That was a big thing for us. Like was somebody would have a song and then the, you know, or as we call it, the bridge over here.
Right.
Like if Ed had a song that was mostly finished, often he would kind of turn to me to write the bridge for it, to give it a lift. Because I like writing bridges anyways. And to me, they always seem like it's an opportunity to open a door into a different room.
Yeah, it's like, it's a weird thing, the bridge, because it's almost like a different melody to another song that somehow relates.
That's right.
To what you've already done. And yet, some of the most famous McCartney-Lennon songs have this middle eight where it's like, wow, that could be a song too.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the classic Lennon-McCartney kind of thing is where McCartney writes We Can Work It Out, and then Lennon writes that Life Is Very Short,
right,
which is in a totally different time signature
and key almost.
Yeah. And it's got this whole other feel, but it works perfectly with it.
You're listening to Humble and Fred Radio.
I'm Philip Pong. There's more Stephen Page on the way. Just a couple more minutes, in fact. Let's savor them. But first, this is the Best of Humble and Fred, brought to you by a couple of very important announcements.
Hey, GigSky, let's talk GigSky. Stay connected to the internet with cellular data-only plans in over 190 countries and regions. Add an eSIM cellular data plan in minutes on iPhone XS, iPhone XS Max, and iPhone XR. Use the dual-SIM iPhone cellular data-only setting with GigSky to stay connected in all these countries. It's fantastic. All right, GigSky has been a trusted global data provider for Apple users since 2015. Choose the GigSky cellular data only plan that's right for you. No strings attached. And they have all sorts of plans at great prices. All right. You know, the retirement Sherpa, he's a good fellow. Tim is a portfolio manager. And Raymond James is a member of the Canadian Investors Protection Fund. Last week, he talked about registered education savings plans versus tax-free savings accounts, the differences, the pros and cons, what your priority could be, should be. Listen, if you're interested in this and just want to look at another dimension to your investment and your preparation for retirement, talk to the Retirement Sherpa. RetirementSherpa.ca is how you get a hold of Timothy. And I'll tell you, top to bottom, investments and insurance, he's got it all. Both sides of the border. He's a very well-rounded man. RetirementSherpa.ca. Talk to Tim about your future.
This is Humble and Fred.
StephenPage.com, tour dates, all the information.
Do you ever write a song now and think, geez, I wish Ed was around to maybe help me with this, or
not so much? I mean, I love what I did with Ed, but I think towards the end of our relationship, I think we both felt like we could kind of predict where the other guy was going. Mm-hmm. So I think you started to get each of us going, oh, another one of these ones. Like, I'd bring in another song that sounded like it's all been done, and they'd kind of roll their eyes and go, oh, it's another Steve Hates Himself song.
I've written some of those.
So being a solo guy now, it makes it a lot easier from that standpoint, obviously.
True, but I do, you know, one thing I learned as a solo artist pretty early on is that, like, it doesn't mean you have to do everything alone. Mm-hmm. Right. It just means that you're the boss. And so,
which makes it easier.
That makes it easier, but also mm-hmm. when you want a collaborator, you can have a collaborator there.
Yeah, and that's why you're collaborating with the guys from The Odds and your people you respect. I want to ask one last songwriting question, and then we're going to get to the new record and something new or people haven't heard. Do you ever write, like, whether it's Brian Wilson or It's All Been Done or any of those songs, when they come to you and you start to play around with them, are there moments where you go, oh, I think that sounds a little bit like that Cream song, or that's a little bit like an old Beatles tune?
It's your biggest, for me, it's my biggest fear, is like, did I just rewrite somebody else's song?
Am I channeling it?
And that's one of the great things about having a collaborator, is because that half of what you're doing sometimes is, what is this? Which is code for, what am I stealing right now?
Yeah, what does this sound like?
Do you ever, like, have to check it note for note?
Yes, I've done it before.
Wow.
And I've changed stuff because mm-hmm. of that, where I've felt uncomfortable. And, you know, the precedent used to be 7 notes in a row. Anything more than that was considered plagiarism, at least in U.S. courts. That was until this Robin Thicke, Marvin Gaye thing that happened a few years ago, which basically says, as long as you even are in the same room as the record that it was once in, like, that ruling is ridiculous and terrifying for every songwriter, because they're basically saying, don't be influenced by anything.
Well, it's like in stand-up, it's like guys stealing jokes versus, you know, there's concepts, there's press, there are premises, and then there's actual word for word, and right. You know, and it's tough because, you know, Jerry Seinfeld will come up with a new bit and it's uniquely his, but there might be derivatives of that.
Sure.
Other people, lots of people do stuff about, I mean, Trump's obvious, but, you know, it's tough, I think, as a songwriter, because it is so easy to go, oh, it sounds a lot like something.
Right. And, you know, and there are standard kind of chord progressions, so that it's easy to build a melody around a chord progression that can sound like something else.
Well, you just
can't you change a note or two here or there, and it's a different melody.
And now mm-hmm. you're competing with your own catalog, and so you start writing a new song. And let's segue to that. What are you going to play for us, by the way?
I was thinking of playing a song called Gravity.
Love it. So there's Gravity. Sarah Bareilles also did that. Anyway,
don't know it.
The title Gravity, but you start playing a new song or working out a new song, and you have to also go, is this another, you know, Stephen Page Hates Himself song?
It's true. And luckily I'm pretty self-aware writer, and I'll you know, in the songs address that I have sung about this before.
Okay.
That kind of thing. And I think on this record especially you'll see the journey of being on. It's a terrible word, but it's a real, you know, it is kind of this trip of like, maybe that part of me is behind me. Maybe I was bored with it too.
Yep. I hear you, man. I think we all do that as we grow up. You know, Discipline, Heal Thyself Part 2, Stephen Page's latest record. It's an actual album that we're holding. And here's Gravity.
So this is how the whole world ends, when all mankind at last repents for self-appointed governments that make no sense, and hence we no longer rise to their lies. And pay no mind to scientists who hide the truth behind a mist of fancy words and Mayan twists. We can't believe you're buying this, 'cause you were wrong, we knew you were wrong. Yes, all along we knew you were wrong. We sing this song to prove you were wrong. We've got strong from being so wrong, and all I can be is what God tells me to be. And now we live in a world where they've outlawed gravity. Yeah, we live in a world where they've outlawed gravity. Pythagoras and Copernicus, mortal men like the rest of us, we let them get the best of us. And now we failed God's test of us, because we were wrong, we knew they were wrong. Yes, all along we knew they were wrong. We sing a song to prove they were wrong. We got strong from being so wrong. And all I can be is what God tells me to be. And now we live in a world where they've outlawed gravity. Yeah, we live in a world where they've outlawed gravity.
It's early. Trying to remember the words. Oh, I got it. Calculus and astronomy, they pale beside Deuteronomy. We banned the drugs and the sodomy, and now we fix the economy. Because we were wrong, we knew we were wrong. Yes, all along we knew we were wrong. We sing a song to prove we were wrong. We were wrong, 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 wrong. And all I can see is what God tells me. Wanted you to know the answer, don't you think you'd have the cure for cancer? If God wanted you to know the answer, don't you think you'd have the cure for cancer?
Wow. Who's that guy? That's good.
You'll notice none of us are rolling our eyes at that, Stephen.
You know, that's the kind of song. Right. And you know, if I were at a Stephen Page concert and you did that, I would not go to the washroom. Mm-hmm. That would not be a washroom song. You know, it's funny, doing radio as long as we have and being a DJ as long as I have, you know, there's a real sign of a good song or a hit song is how quickly, when you hear it for the first time, can you sing the melody or hear the melody? And there's a perfect example. Like, I can't remember much of it, but I can, by the time we were all dancing along with
awesome.
It. And so
but that's an example of a song that I had bits of that. Actually, I've kind of had the shape of it, the chords and most of the melody, for years trying to figure out what it was. And it took me a long time to figure out what the song could be and how to shape it and what the words were and all that stuff.
Well, it was very good. And another reason to go get Discipline, Heal Thyself Part 2.
And now let us journey together to Humble and Fred's Valley of Love and Delight. It is a gift.
It's a gift to be simple, just a gift to be free. Come now.
From one Canadian star, we're moving on to a couple of quite Canadian stories coming up. I'm Philip Hong. We've got more with the Humble and Fred conversation coming up. We're going to stay in touch. This is the best of Humble and Fred on air, online. It's all my fault, but couldn't tell you yesterday. You'd forgiven me, but it'll still be 2 days till I say I'm sorry. Hold it, now I'll watch a hood. Good morning. Welcome back. I'm Philip Hong on the best of Humble and Fred on air online. Thank you so much for listening, by the way. From our archives, we've had a couple of fun conversations, and so let's present one of those segments with you. Let's hear about storms in a French toilet.
So give me a couple minutes here, and I'll tell you. Hang on. What is this, Phil?
This is from Anastasia.
All right.
The movie, the Here's
Perry. Because it wouldn't be a Humble and Fred show without a, I'll just say it. No, without a story. Oh, and by the way, on the show today, just us. Barker's coming in. We got to catch up with Phil. And we will... I don't know what we'll do. Read a couple emails. We've got a bunch of stories to tell you. I can give you a couple highlights before the... Do you want a couple highlights before the poo story?
Of France?
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, as I told you on the phone when we caught up, the number one highlight is I could have been anywhere with Charlie. You know, I've been lucky enough to travel with my kids for some time now, and if there's any benefit or whatever to being divorced, in our case, it was that we went on these summertime daddy-daughter trips. But I haven't lived with Charlie in 6 years. She moved away after high school. And so when we go away, it's like having your child again at arm's length for day after day. And I loved it.
Sure.
In the car, having dinner. And one afternoon, you talk about naps. So, you know, we took a nap. The first Airbnb we had was in a building that was built in the 17th century on streets, and I know you've seen them, but I'd never been in those streets where they're so narrow, you can't get a car through. And you look up and there's shutters, and you just know years before people were throwing their buckets out. You know what I mean?
Like, yes.
Just those kind of streets, and I know I'm not much of a picture taker, but I took some pictures because, I'd never seen anything like it. So we're in a building like that, and... You know, I had a nap, and I woke up before Charlie, and I know it's going to sound sappy, but I woke up before Charlie, and I went to wake her up, and I just watched her sleep.
Aw.
Because, you know, again, as a, you know, I haven't been a real full-time dad, obviously. None of us have at our age for quite some time.
Right.
So, number one highlight, that's what it was. Mm-hmm. Just being with her, you know, she's a fun person in general and funny, and we have, you know, great times, and she's easy to travel with.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's that?
No, that's sweet.
No, it wasn't. And she's such an engaged individual and so easygoing, you know. And she'd been she's pretty tired because she had been in California for a week. And then she'd come home for a day and then went to France for her job. And then she went to Italy by herself, which was cool. So that was kind of neat. I'd never seen those Colosseums. I know you'd gone to Italy and stuff. I'd never seen those. And so just the being around, being in a building that's a few thousand years old, predates Jesus, I found that fascinating. I'm not much of a history person, but I thought those things were neat. And I, you know, seeing them, not again, you know, I was telling Rachel, you know, museums are fine, but I mean, looking at a painting painted by Picasso or Van Gogh is also, I couldn't do it more than, I wouldn't want to do it every day, but it was kind of neat for an afternoon, especially with my daughter.
Right.
And then, of course, we went on to, we got our places through Airbnb. So here's the story. So we had this, because we didn't have air conditioning in the 17th century building, but we had air conditioning in the 19th century building.
Right.
So we rented this place for two nights, and we thought we'd stay a third night, and I contacted the guy. You know, it's all through, you know, Airbnb app. I contact this person. I say, hey, can we stay another night? He goes, yes, but I'll be there Saturday morning at 11 to collect the keys. Let's just do it through cash so we don't get it as a service charge through Airbnb.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I said, no problem. So I got him €100 and was meeting him at 11. So that morning we wake up, we go have a bunch of bread and coffee. And it's about 10:30, 10:40. These places are very small. The whole apartment's the size of this space we're in right now. Mm-hmm. And it's about 20 to 11, and he's going to come pick up the key at 11, and I have to go to the washroom. And, you know, a lot of bread, a lot of mussels, a lot of curry broth.
Oof.
Mm. And it was...
recipe for disaster.
It was.
The first of the year.
I don't want to get graphic, and I just want to describe it. It was awful. And I didn't know what to do. And I get, maybe it's even closer to 11. Could have been 1:45. But I was lighting matches, and Charlie's like, we have to get out of here. We have to get out of here. And Buddy shows up about 5 to 11, a little early. And we're downstairs. Like, well, right. It was two floors down. I didn't want to be in the apartment.
Right.
And I just went, give him the key. And I kind of ran away. I met the guy. And then about a half an hour later, all right, you know, what they do is people review each other. You review the place, and the place reviews you as a customer.
Right.
So I see on my phone, on my data thing, I look on the phone. I'm like, ooh, it's a review from Stefan. I'm like, what's Stefan going to say? And so for the rest of the day, Charlie and I were like making up fake reviews. And when the apartment was very clean, but apparently Howard killed a small raccoon. There was the smell of a dead skunk that had lived in Howard's ass.
Oh, the night soil from the 1600s somewhere.
Buddy, it was so embarrassing. Like, honestly.
Pepe Le Pew.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I'm like, why couldn't I have gone like at, you know, 8 o'clock or whatever, but... Oh, hello, Stefan. Here's your key.
Hello, Don the Sticky Castle.
Well, he does provide a flat with a washroom, so he knows it's going to be used.
Yeah, but
so
no,
I wouldn't overthink it.
Yeah, I know.
You know it's going to be used, not abused.
Not abused. He has a toilet. He didn't think you were going to dump toxic chemicals like it was. And again, not to be too graphic.
Been there, brother.
It was pretty gross.
Been there. I know.
Did he leave that a review? Like, has he written stuff down?
No, actually, the review was quite nice. You know, they basically, I had to have Charlie translate it, but basically, you know, we were clean, we were prompt, the communication was fine.
But the turtlet, you know.
But yeah, everything was fine, but it would have been cool if he hadn't sacrificed a small animal. There was a dead goat. Howard left a dead goat.
That's a breath.
A rotted corpse of a goat was in the bathroom. I know you were kidding me because I had a very long, took me 18 hours to get home. The Air Canada flight was delayed. And all I put on my little Facebook, which, by the way, haven't been on social media much in a couple of weeks, but I put on the fact that everyone likes to, you know, crap on Air Canada.
Yes.
And I had a great experience with them. And, you know, even though I'd been delayed, it was just one of those things where it was nobody's fault. They had mechanical problems and they couldn't have been better. Could have been more responsive and they couldn't have been... I don't know. It was fine. And I'm a pretty impatient person.
Yeah.
But I recognized early that it wasn't me getting angry wasn't going to make it better. And they weren't anything but accommodating.
Well, aren't you, Mr. Wonderful?
That's what he puts.
He's such a dick.
My, how times
change. Mr. Wonderful.
I know. Roll back the clock 20 years and we have an international incident.
Right.
I'm almost 6 years old. I'm tired. I'm a tired old man most of the time now.
And it's southern France. You're not stuck in Newfoundland.
Listen, and here's what it's all about.
Yeah. By the way, Newfoundland's fine.
It's okay.
Here's here's the thing about that. Hey, listen.
yeah.
Those things happen. It's all on how they handle those things happening.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool. You know what I mean? Mechanical breakdowns do happen. Those things do happen. Yep. It's how the airline handles you or keeps you in the loop that makes all the difference.
Mm-hmm.
It's when those things happen, you can't get answers, or, you know, you're being shuttled here, shuttled there without answers, or just not being treated properly through that. And obviously you were, so...
I was in a lineup
What more can you ask?
Yeah, exactly. You know, there was 165 people that had gotten to the airport early, and then the flight was supposed to be at originally 9:40 in the morning, then 1 o'clock in the afternoon, then 3, and then 4, then 5, and finally we left at 6.
Mm.
But through it all, you know, I've got the Air Canada app, and I asked for notifications on my phone, so I was getting updates all the time, including, because Charlie's flight, I woke up at 3 in the morning because Charlie was leaving at 6, so I went to say goodbye. And then my plan was to stay up, get on the 9:40 flight, and go to sleep.
Yes.
And I immediately saw the notifications the flight was delayed because they could tell already the plane coming from Montreal to Nice had been get into some trouble. Mm-hmm. Actually, the funniest thing was, also in France, there's an air traffic. There's some kind of aviation strike going on.
Oh, there's always something. An airline.
So we finally get on the plane, and it's about to push back from the gate at 5:40.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever number of hours after 9:40. And the pilot says, ladies and gentlemen, we have a problem. Just quickly, we're going to get going here in a second, but the entire ground crew just left. It was great. Actually, a few people laughed. Like, I thought that was hilarious. I'm like, what? They all just left. Okay, we're done now. So there was they had to find somebody to push the plane back because the rest of the crew just went, well, see
like
you later. Whatever.
It's out.
Time for bread.
I want more sick days.
Just a way. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be stuck here for a minute. So we actually left at 6 o'clock. Then we get to Montreal. Mm-hmm. Supposed to leave at 9 something. It's delayed to 9:30. We get to Toronto at 11 p.m. And everything's fine. I'm texting Rachel. I'm about to come home. And the pilot says, folks, we're just a few minutes here. The gate's not ready. I go, whatever.
Uh-huh.
Fine.
So you could be heard throughout the plane going, fine, whatever.
No, yes.
I'm easy peasy.
I was like, that's fine.
Yeah.
No, I just thought it was hilarious.
He stood up and said, hey, this is the new Howard, eh? Whatever, who cares?
18 hours from door to door to get home.
Could have flown to Asia in 18
hours. That's a long flight getting home, 8.5 hours.
Yeah?
Going east to west.
Mm-hmm.
On the way there, I flew to Frankfurt. And our flight was slightly delayed, and I had to book it through the Frankfurt airport.
Did you get off the plane in Frankfurt?
So I book it through the Frankfurt airport, and I look in there, and my next flight to Nice from Frankfurt is in another terminal, and all these people that were on my plane are about to get, you know, it's like, oh, this way to the tram. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm in Germany, and there's some people asking me to get on a train. I'm like, never, not again, Germany. Not again, Germany.
I refuse.
This is Humble and Fred.
We've got more with the Humble Howard European Tour coming up on The Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Hong. Thanks so much for listening. First, a couple of very important announcements, or do they say in French? Le message important.
Let's talk about strain print.
Yes, why don't we do that?
Use cannabis better with the free StrainPrint companion app. It'll help you learn how much more rewarding and beneficial your experience with cannabis can be. You know, there are currently thousands of strains available, and everyone possesses or processes cannabis differently. That's why they created StrainPrint, the app. Now, the app allows you to easily track and journal your cannabis experience to better understand what the best strains are for you. Reach optimal symptom relief and live your best life. Use the StrainPrint app. And again, it's free.
Amaze.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to remind everyone that every day is a great day to go to FYI Music News, updated weekly, written for and about Canadians and Canada's music industry. FYIMusicNews.ca. Subscribe to the newsletter. It's a tightly written digest of key events and news of the day. Expanded features including a weekly career section and columns by musician and journalist Bill King. Check it out every day. FYIMusicNews.ca.
This is Humble and Fred.
Welcome back. This is The Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Hong. We're listening to some fascinating, timeless conversations with Humble and Fred. And so let's continue on with another segment. We're going to hear more about European driving and soccer fanatics and seeing Amanda on TV.
I remember you described
a story. Oh, you drove, right.
Yeah. But I remember you were describing a story.
But they're on the driver's on the left, right?
Yeah. But and on the main highways, it's fine-ish.
Yeah.
Going through some of the bigger cities, I went through Nice and went through Marseille. In the cities, I got a little bit nervous, only because everything's in French, and some of those exits come up, and you just don't know where. A couple times I got turned around. But you told me a story, you told us all a story about being in Italy, and I think it was one of your trips with Darren and Lori, and you guys were sort of stuck on one of these streets,
the Amalfi.
Common.
Yeah, yes. I was on the side of a mountain in Amalfi, and literally, a bus couldn't make the turn, so we all got stuck. It was weird. Anyway,
so I had no appreciation for how narrow the streets are, and the village of Arles, which is centuries old,
mm-hmm.
I had the GPS take me to the Airbnb, which I realized later there's really no way to get into it. Right. And as I was going through these streets, it was my first time driving in that, and I thought of you, and I was like, I don't know what it, I said to Charlie, what do I do? Because we keep turning in these little narrow streets, and I'm like, what do we do if I just got that panicky feeling like I should just get out of here and park it away, which is what I ended up doing. I found a parking place a few blocks out of the main village part. And but here's the weird thing, and Barker's here. I'm not sure if you've experienced this. The weird thing on those little narrow streets is at around 6 o'clock, all cars stop. They put out some tables, and that's a restaurant.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
It's like...
Yeah, it's great.
I know, it's crazy. I said to Charlie, I said, didn't we just drive down the street? They're like, screw it. We're just putting out some tables.
Yep.
Same in Cassis. It was like the main little roads you can drive through. And as soon as the sun, it's 6 o'clock, comes, they're gone. You can't drive anywhere.
Isn't it wonderful?
It really is.
And try getting anything at 1 o'clock. Good luck.
Well, I said between 3 and 6, everything stops.
Yeah.
In where I was in France, even the restaurants were like, yeah, we're done now.
I used to lock myself out of my apartment, and the concierge just, they'd be in the back eating or sleeping.
Yeah.
And they just wouldn't come help me. So I'd have to go and sit in a cafe and wait until like 2:30. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm just saying to Freddie, I've never experienced that kind of, those narrow, and I watched, you know, it's funny, I guess, how you get used to it, because I watched people delivering goods to these restaurants, and not big trucks, but trucks, just doing the little post around these streets.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing.
You know, and they seem to know how to do it. They don't get stuck.
That's the same thing about the attitude over there. Here, that stuff is a calamity, right? Mm-hmm. Like, can you imagine them blocking off a street every night at 6 so they could put tables for a restaurant? Like, I mean, it just wouldn't happen. And
right.
People would lose their minds, and it would be on all the talk shows.
Yeah, the talk shows.
It's just, now, you were in, how big a town is Nice?
350,000 people, and it's stunning.
Was the food diverse?
All kind of.
Yeah, see,
all
Rome isn't like that. Like,
all kind of foods.
Yeah.
No, Italians Rome, like
every
Italian.
Every restaurant's exactly the same, like on the menu. Totally right. But so it was more diverse. In
yeah,
the,
very, very nice.
When Marco's cousins came and lived with us last summer for far too long,
that's funny.
Trying to remember how long it was.
Too long.
Yeah.
Whatever it was.
Yeah.
14 days, too long.
They're big. We were trying to take them for different types of food, and the best that we could get, the most expansive we could get in their food repertoire was to get them Neapolitan style pizza. They're from Trento, so northern Italy, right. And they would not venture out from anything that you would consider Italian, and only different Italian was like, oh, this is different. This is interesting. Like, come on, people.
Neapolitan ice cream pizza?
No. Yeah, right.
Let me write that down.
Concepts. And I get back to doing stand-up.
JK.
I saw two things in Nice that I'd never seen before. One was we took these, you know, they have like the, were they not, it's like a bike rickshaw, you know, like you get driven around for a little tour. So we were only there for one day. So I said to Charlie, let's do this. And so we had this person give us a 30-minute tour of the old town, Nice, and whatever. And we went to the port where the yachts dock. Now, this is very close to Cannes or Cannes. I still don't know how to say it.
Tanny.
And I'd never been that close to a world-class, huge yacht. And there were about five or six of them, but one of them was remarkably large.
With the helicopter pads.
I'd never seen anything like it, Freddie. Yeah. And I said to the person, can we stop here for a second? I want to just get a sense of it, because part of it is the opulence of it. And also, I thought, who are the folks?
I know.
I said folks again, because I'm like Doug Ford.
Folks!
Who are the people that get to, this is their life. They get to just boat around the south of France in this structure.
Yep.
They're so big, Fred, that the boats, what do you call it?
Was private?
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, okay, so there was a cruise ship there, a Club Med cruise ship.
Right.
And it was huge, obviously, like a cruise ship. But this one big yacht, it wasn't anywhere near that big, but it was big enough that the perspective was weird. But I will tell you that one of those boats, when you have a when you have a ship and you have another boat that you just get to putter around with, their fun boat,
a tender,
whatever that's their that's fun boat called. Was huge. Like, it was insane how some people live. So I saw that. I'd never seen that before. And the other thing we did, and I think I put it on Facebook, was I said to Charlie, we got to the little area there in the old port with about 25 minutes left in the France-Argentina game. And I said, we need to stay here. I want to stay here and I want to soak this up, because if France wins, I want to see what that's like. Mm-hmm. So France scores to go ahead 3-2. And the noise was indescribable. These young French dudes, French bros, right? Mm. Where they score and they just all of a sudden get up and everyone just starts running with flags. Like, oh, really? Running, yeah. Booking it.
That's
running
amazing.
Flags, screaming. And then they come back to the bar. Wild. And I said, I hope to see that again. Yeah. And when they scored to go 4-2, again, insanity. Booking it, running, flags. But when they won the game... So imagine Yonge Street from Front to Dundas. Mm-hmm. Maybe not that long. Front to Queen for sure. Mm-hmm. That many blocks of bars, narrow streets, and people. And when France won, we got excited, but the French people lost their minds. Mm-hmm. With the and the noise and the running and the flags. And then the weirdest thing is all the bars that were showing the game outside... As soon as the game is over, within a half an hour, table's out. Now we're serving dinner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Moules and frites, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so happy you had a great time.
I said to Charlie, what a great experience. I said, it's like my analogy was, it's like being at the Super Bowl if everyone was cheering, everyone in the country was cheering for one team.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, it was crazy. Just madness.
No, that would be a good time to go, especially when they're doing, they're still in, right? Yeah, in the semifinals
Belgium. Still in.
I think they're playing Belgium.
When I was there, it was down to the round of 16. Where are they now? Eight?
Four.
Four?
Four. Mm. Yeah, it's Croatia, Belgium, England, and what was the other one?
France,
yeah.
Also
them.
Maybe.
Also them. I haven't watched any of it, but I'm glad Russia's out. Because it was in Russian, Putin. I don't trust him, and they were all probably drugged up, those Russians.
It shouldn't be allowed to do it in Russia. I take umbrage.
Well, as you guys well know, I've been documenting the Russian invasion here in Canada.
Yes.
It's rampant. In this building, there's some sketchy Russian stuff going on.
At my cottage.
Trust me.
There were tits out at my cottage.
Nice.
Yeah, well, on the beach.
That's legal.
Yeah, I know.
Speaking of that, I saw more granny titty. I saw some topless titty, granny tit,
right.
In south of France. And nice, too. Mm-hmm.
Missing nips. Missing nips, they go underneath. And
no,
you're like,
actually not.
They go?
Very, very nicely shaped women in their 60s.
Great.
I'm telling you.
Mm. Great.
Yeah. Very nice. I saw some younger women, too, but I don't objectify. You know, I don't see.
It's pretty cool when you see a granny and go, hey, she's got a nice tit on her.
Yeah.
Hey.
I said that both in English and in French. Le bon tit, grandma.
After the first time at the beach, it's all relative. You're like, yeah, everyone's naked. Cool.
Yeah.
We're good.
And what is the big deal?
No, exactly.
Just kills me. Saw some, you know, lots of the French dudes in their Speedos. You know, a lot of that going on. Trying to remember what I was going to say next.
Did you wear a
Speedo? Oh, I know. No. Barker. So yeah. I started watching, I don't even know why. You know, Charlie was watching some show at night, and so I thought, I'll start watching a series. You know, we go to bed pretty early at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, I'm back in the apartment, so I started watching Designated Survivor. Mm. And I ended up watching all this. It's a show with Kiefer Sutherland.
Oh, done here.
Yeah, done here.
Right.
And you watch it in France, you were watching it?
Yeah.
That's funny to me.
Yeah, well, because you get, it's a cool concept, is, you know, every time they have the State of the Union, they always put one of the secretaries on the cabinet, put them in a different location in case because everyone in the State of the Union, it's Congress, Senate, mm-hmm. the Supreme Court, the mm-hmm. President, Vice President, it's the entire government. And the idea is that if that ever something ran afoul, you have to have a designated survivor who takes over.
And the whole show is that?
Well, that's how. Wow. So what happens, it starts with the premise that everyone gets killed by a missile. The house of whatever that's called, the state is broken.
Yep.
That's not the word, but you know what I mean.
The executive portion.
And Kiefer Sutherland, who's the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, kind of a lowly secretary.
Who's about to get fired.
Becomes the president. And Barker, well, here's the people. It's like, it's so Toronto. So there's Dan Duran in every other episode. I have a question.
Yeah, his line.
His one line. And then there's Ali Hussein, who plays the Kumari ambassador. And I was texting Ali all the way through it. I just going, at first I go, I don't like the way the president talks to you. And he goes, just wait. And because he becomes a bad guy. Like, whatever episode it was, season two. I'm into these characters. Yeah. And all of a sudden, these characters I've grown to love are now speaking with Mabarkey.
Well, you may find yourself turning over in bed, and you may find yourself beside Humble and Fred, and you may ask yourself, my God, how did they get here?
Thank you kindly for listening to this edition of The Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Pong. We've got more on the way, and this edition of The Best of Humble and Fred is brought to you by Strainprint, FYI Music News, Gig Sky, The Retirement Sherpa, The Chambers Plan, Spearhead Brewing Company, and HomegrownKits.ca. There's more on the way, as well as online at HumbleAndFredRadio.com.